Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning, I'm Charlie Herman. I'm joined today by our regular contributors, Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine and Joe Nocera with the New York Times. It's Memorial Day weekend, and while it's not the official start of summer, it sure feels like it. So we're going to do something a little bit different this morning. We're going to kick back a bit and talk about what we plan to read this summer. We're going to try and invoke a little bit of that summer feeling here. And while we love fiction, this is a business show. So, Joe, what are you planning on reading this summer?
Well, one book that I've really become fascinated by, which is just out, is called Sons of Wichita, How the Koch Brothers Became America's Most Powerful and Private Dynasty by Daniel Shulman. It's a surprisingly straightforward book. It's not a polemic the way a movie that's about to come out, Citizen Koch, you know, is a diatribe against them. But it really does tell you fascinating things about how, for instance, their father was one of the co-founders of the John Birch Society.
The extremely conservative, libertarian, really, or proto-libertarian group.
Right. And their politics really was formed by their father. And Charles Koch, who really is the family leader, though he's not the oldest, is the most libertarian of them. And he imposes his political views not just on the outside world, but he uses it as a kind of a management construct inside the company.
But how do those libertarian views and the way that they fund various different groups throughout the country, how do they influence the way that business works in this country, the way that regulation gets passed?
It influences quite a bit. For starters, the Koch brothers founded the Cato Institute, the libertarian think tank. They fund all kinds of think tanks in Washington that affect legislation, that have helped create the free enterprise, no government involved ideology that drives the Republican Party. I'd say they have had as much to do with that as any single person.
You know, I saw once a fascinating ProPublica graphic of the tentacles of the Koch brother money and all the institutions that they went through. And there are some that are big and obvious like Cato, but there are others that are sort of shells for third or fourth party organizations. So, their tentacles really do reach everywhere. One thing that interests me, though, and I'm curious, Joe, if you have a thought on this, is whether or not the Koch brothers would be as big a deal if the Democrats hadn't decided to sort of vilify them so much and give them as much press as they have.
Well, they became the easy target. And I think you're right. I think the right now has George Soros. The left now has the Koch brothers. Yeah. Each side has somebody they can demonize.
Well, Rana, what are you planning on reading this weekend when you get to the beach chair?
So I am already about a third of the way into The Sixth Extinction by Elizabeth Colbert, the New Yorker writer who covers issues of climate change and global warming. And a couple of these chapters I'd already read in pieces that she's done for The New Yorker. And it's a fascinating book because basically the thesis is that there have been five major extinction events in global history and that we may be entering the sixth one. And she paints a very convincing portrait of how not only is the Earth warming, but a lot of things because of human interaction are starting to happen together that are destroying the environment. So it's not just the climate getting warmer. It's the seas getting more acidic. It's the fact that we're all on airplanes bringing strange fungus on the bottom of our shoes that then destroy entire bat populations in North America. And that this has a sort of exponential snowballing cycle that is really going to change the planet very quickly. And that's the other thing that's fascinating is that going back through history, we think of geologic change as something that happens very slowly, but actually it can happen pretty quickly.
In a blink of an eye.
In a blink of an eye. And in fact, she talks about how that's already happening. And so I've been thinking a lot about what this means for business, because there are stories already of countries like the Netherlands, for example, that are exporting their dike technologies to different parts of the world where seas are rising. You can see it in the earnings of certain kinds of stocks that companies that sell insulation, green building materials. You're even seeing a jump in certain green technology stocks. I think the fact that China has made this a really big issue in their last big fifth plenum Communist Party planning meeting is going to be interesting. And I just wonder if business is actually going to be ahead of the curve on this.
But who's going to be ahead of the curve? Is it going to be government coming in with regulations to try and combat it? Or is it corporations who begin to see that either there's money to be made or there's money to be lost if we don't actually do something about this?
So it's a good question. I mean, companies have taken things like emissions trading seriously for a long time. In fact, I remember covering this issue 15 years years ago in Europe, and companies were already in the market doing this way before government told them to do it. But I do think that there is a sort of a steady drumbeat now. You are seeing certain new building regulations come into effect, new auto standards come into effect, and that's, I think, going to kick some of these green stocks up further.
Well, I'm going to try and get to a book that I'm sure the two of you have probably read already, which is Barbarians at the Gate, The Fall of RJR Nabisco. And this is the story about the takeover. At the time, it was probably the world's largest takeover of the company that was known for making Camel cigarettes and Oreos. And what I'm really curious to see is what has changed in the more than 20 years since this book was written in the Wall Street corporate culture, the takeover of one company, especially now when you see a lot of activist investors who are putting pressure on companies, or there's a lot of buyouts that are happening now, a lot of them being fueled by money that these buyout companies are borrowing from the bank. It's not their actual money. And I'm really curious to see how much has changed in the wake of, you know, the excesses of the 80s, the financial crisis, and if anything really has changed, if it's still a relevant book.
One thing that is different is takeovers have become so routine. Back when Barbarians in the Gates was written, companies didn't really go hostile against each other, and most deals were much smaller. Now, you know, a deal like the RJR deal is dwarfed by current deals. You know,
look right now at Pfizer and AstraZeneca.
Pfizer's offering $100 billion for AstraZeneca, and AstraZeneca says, no, that's not good enough. So that's one difference. I think also there's much less flamboyance in the way they go about it. I mean, that the excesses of the 80s were really excessive.
Yeah, it's more issue-based now, you're right.
And they were a lot of fun. And that's one of the reasons, by the way, that Barbarians at the Gate is such a great read. It's populated with these larger-than-life characters. And now the takeover titans are, if I dare say, a little smaller than life.
Well, Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine and Joe Nocera with The New York Times, thanks so much for joining and for revealing what's on your summer reading list.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And what about you? What books are you hoping to get through this summer? Let us know by leaving a comment at our show page. You can find us at moneytalking.org. Or if you've read the books that we're reading this summer, let us know what you think. I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.